find ourselves working together again and again in different types of activities. So this is great that she invited me to be part of this. I do want to acknowledge the work that she did for our program at San Ysidro Health Center, and how she worked very hard at starting a peer advocacy program, starting a volunteer peer advocacy program that is now thriving, is now not only doing peer advocacy, it's also doing outreach work. And so she really laid the groundwork for this group to be able to be established, and is now a growing group. So I wanted to just acknowledge her work.
Thank you, Rosana and Mari. I did not mention that, or else I probably would have gotten emotional like I did for my thesis. This is part of my thesis, just because this was a huge part of my life, and amazing individuals that I worked with, not just the staff, but the clients. It's really driven me, and continues to do so. So as I mentioned earlier, my name is Leticia Cáceres, and I am currently faculty at the Graduate School of Public Health at San Diego State University. Previous to that, as mentioned, I was working as HIV operations manager at the San Ysidro Health Center for about 7 years or so. But like I said, or like she said, I haven't been able to cut the umbilical cord, so I continue to work with them in one way or another. My work here, which you'll see in a minute, inspired me and is pretty much what led me to continue on with my education, and so therefore I received my master's in public health last year at San Diego State, and it's been amazing to kind of incorporate or put together my education and my experience. So how do I do this? So the title, Impact of an Empowerment-Based Intervention for Monolingual Latinos Living with HIV and AIDS Along the U.S.-Mexico Border. No disclosures, no relationships to disclose. Learning objectives: define empowerment and describe its relationship to psychosocial factors, health status, and quality of life of Latinos living with HIV and AIDS. To identify and discuss effective components of a culturally linguistically appropriate peer-based intervention aimed at reducing barriers to care. To recognize and discuss the need for valid measures to evaluate effectiveness of community-based interventions. So, like I said, this presentation includes my thesis, and a little bit of my thesis, and really will speak to the preparation, I guess, of the promotores, because at the time, the first goal was not to train them as promotores, but just to really empower them, and hopefully to take a larger role. So a lot of what this work was focused on was more individual empowerment. So anyway, the barriers to care, we've gone through that, so I'm going to skip over that, as well as stigma. You have had a great overview of the context of stigma and how it impacts the transborder Latino population here in San Diego. Quality of life, the perception of quality of life of someone living with HIV and AIDS has been shown to reduce the effects of stigma. There have been many studies that looked at quality of life and the psychosocial factors especially. But a quality of life is defined as a person's sense of well-being that stems from satisfaction or dissatisfaction with the areas of life that are important to him or her. The measures and domains of quality of life differ among researchers, and there's still a lot of work to be done, but for the most part, they will include health and functioning, socioeconomic aspects, and psychosocial and spiritual aspects and family. And most of the studies have agreed that psychosocial aspects are a very significant factor in quality of life. So understanding the predictors of quality of life and life satisfaction among people living with HIV and AIDS has been shown to influence medical decision making, is associated with one's willingness to pursue or accept treatment, and may influence disease course and symptomology. So this is a model that has been shown to a model for a lot of studies working with different ethnic populations. And as you can see, it links clinical variables with health-related quality of life and found to be useful as a useful framework. And so as you can see, the characteristics of the individual, the characteristics of the environment all have play a role. And the biological, psychological factors leading to play a role in the symptom status, functional status, general health perceptions, and overall quality of life. So that just kind of ties it all together. Social support is defined as the individual's belief that he or she is cared for and is a member of a network of mutual obligations. Social support has been found to buffer negative impact of stressors and can have a direct effect on health and course of illness. And really, I can't say enough about the social support, because I think what this program that I'll be talking about more, this program was exactly that for these individuals. It was a social support network, first and foremost, and then it turned into something greater. So one of the ways, I looked at as far as reducing these barriers to care for the individual was through empowerment. And empowerment is defined as the ability of individuals to gain control socially, politically, economically, and psychologically through three major components: access to information, knowledge, and skills, decision making, and individual self-efficacy, community participation, and perceived control. So empowered patients tend to be highly interactive and communicative with their healthcare providers, are involved in their treatment decisions, are active knowledge seekers, and will sever the patient-provider relationship if treatment is not deemed adequate. So I created this just to give you an idea of my thinking, as well as tying in social support, empowerment, quality of life, and how it improves health status, both mental health status and physical health status. So empowerment and its components through education activities, community involvement, and decision making. Through that process could lead to disclosure, and it did for some of our clients. They had not really talked about this with anybody else, and so through the activities and through the different meetings that they had, they disclosed to the others within the group. Just not just their status, obviously, because this was a group of family members as well as the clients, but just about, you know, their experiences and what they were going through. So naturally, that's social support, and social support leading to enhanced access to care, improved health-related behaviors, improved quality of life, improved immune function, in turn leading to improved health status. So the program, we called it a community leadership program. It was designed in 2001 as a leadership training program of GASA South Bay at the San Ysidro Health Center. It was created to address the lack of voice and representation of HIV-positive Latinos in the local HIV planning process. So at the time,
We saw there was a need for representation of a regional representation of the South Bay region, meaning San Ysidro, Chula Vista, National City, all the southern part of San Diego, as well as HIV-positive Latinos in general throughout the county. And so, you know, Rosana and I were kind of tired of being the two people that were, you know, trying to speak up, because I kind of felt they were not listening to us at a certain time, and I felt like, you know, why don't we have, you know, the clients speak up? And so we just couldn't ask them because there was multiple reasons why they wouldn't want to, again, those barriers. So that's why we decided to create this program. And so the goal of the program was to empower the HIV-positive consumers to take a more active role in their own health and become agents of change in the community. And by providing our consumers with all the information and opportunities, we also hope to improve their physical and mental health status and overall quality of life. So the components of the program, there were three key components. The first one, educational presentations and trainings. Well, first of all, I'd like to point out that this was an unfunded project. We had donations that we used as incentives, but that's pretty much it. We did not have a funding source for this program, so it made it very challenging, yet we seemed to get through it. So it was open to all clients and affected family members. So we opened up the educational presentations and trainings. I think that was really important for a lot of reasons. Really, I think involving the family to participate along with the client was a way to really bring them together and to I guess open up that dialogue for them. There was approximately five trainings over the first year. And those trainings were in leadership, and there was a training that speakers that trained them to be part of a speakers bureau, I think it was Positively Speaking, to teach them how to do presentations and testimonials, which was really incredible. And there were several others. And but most of the topics were chosen based on their requests and relevant to to current issues. The second component was the community involvement opportunities, and this is really where I started to see significant growth pretty immediately. This was open to the clients. We did provide incentives, and so we thought, you know, this is who we really wanted to affect, so we decided that we would limit the opportunities to the clients themselves. So they received points for pre-approved community involvement activities. There was peer advocacy, there was volunteering in the office, there was the speaking engagements, things like that, and they had to get, there was a list of different activities that they could do and get points for. So the incentives were given according to those points. The third component was the CLP and GASA events and activities. They had to go to the monthly meetings, and this is where they received their incentive. These monthly meetings were to just talk about their experiences, any challenges they were having, anything programmatic, any programmatic questions, but just to kind of get together and maintain that social support network. Participation in GASA events and activities. We had a number of educational activities there at GASA, and so we encouraged them to attend those.
And they also assisted in planning a lot of the activities, not just CLP, but GASA. They started to really get more involved in the planning, and we really encouraged them to do that. And although funding was limited at that time, we did our best. And as long as we were honest about that and did what we could, it worked out. Component number four, evaluation. This is probably where I think the lack of funding and the lack of staff, impacted the most. We really weren't able to collect data the way that I would have liked, and we didn't have the tools, the measurement tools, pre and post and all that. It was really kind of just, whatever we could do. And I think that's important because that's pretty much the reality of a lot of community-based programs. And one area where I think, the researchers and academia can be more involved in. But we did get regular feedback from the participants through evaluation forums, some of the activities and the group discussions and the monthly meetings and things like that. So we did take that their feedback into account a good amount of the time. So for the study itself, I had two questions. Did participation in the CLP improve the perceived health status and overall quality of life of the participants during its first year of implementation? And did the program and its participants have an impact on the community? So they had to have had an HIV/AIDS diagnosis, enrolled in care there at San Ysidro Health Center, and they participated in the program in the entire period of the project, March 2001, March 2002. The comparison group for this study was data obtained from the SPIN study that Mari talked about. We used a quality of life survey, which was a modified version of the SPIN study quality of life survey, and we had semi-structured interviews that contained questions on self-reported health status, overall quality of life, access to health care, and participation in community and GASA center activities. So both the survey and the self-structured, semi-structured interview were implemented between March and May 2005 and designed to assess retrospective quality of life and perceived health for the participants during the period. So this is one of the study limitations, is a few years after the fact. Out of the 27 eligible participants, only 12 could be located. This speaks to the to a lot of things, but really the transient nature of the population. And we didn't have a lot of records 3 years after the fact, so that it was really hard to locate them. Only 12 could be located, and 9 were male, 3 were female, 30 to 53, ages 30 to 53, average age of 45. All were Latino, 92% primary language was Spanish, and all of them were uninsured and 200% below federal poverty rate. The comparison group were the SPINS participants, and mostly were Latino and mostly were uninsured. So the survey results, more than 90% of the participants indicated that they had good to excellent health during their participation, and over 90% agreed with the statement that their health was excellent during CLP. When compared to the SPINS participants, CLP participants reported significantly better health, significantly more likely to report their health as excellent, and less likely to report they were feeling bad. So this just gives you an idea. There were 3 questions that were included in a subscale for perceived health, and this is one of the questions. In general, during your participation in CLP, would you say your health was excellent, very good? So you'll see the CLP participants over 90% versus, I believe, it's 59% or something. So that just gives you an idea. And it's another one. Overall quality of life subscale. Overall quality of life scores range from 9 to 33. The mean score was 18, but over 40% scored a 9 or 10 on overall quality of life. When compared to SPINS participants, CLP participants reported significantly better quality of life scores, significantly less likely to report feeling downhearted and blue, but the other responses did not differ significantly. So this was my favorite part. This is the qualitative results of the interview, the semi-structured interviews. What I did was I analyzed the interviews, transcripts, and I created themes, common themes among them, and I came up with top five. The top theme number one is motivation to help others. Providing peer support was about 83% or 10 of them identified peer support as a huge motivating factor. Theme number two, create a greater control of illness and life. 11 of them identified knowledge of HIV and AIDS care, treatment, and services as a big factor. Theme number three, relational support. 10 of them identified relationships with peers as a big impact. Theme four, psychological and health changes. 8 of them identified psychological transformation. And then theme five, program feedback. So just some quotes from some of our of the clients under greater control of illness and life. It gave me a lot of confidence. I can express myself easily in a support group. I can stay in front and address something that before would embarrass me or something I simply would not do. It helped me to be more open with my doctor as well as my counselor, because when one doesn't speak up, they can't express themselves and the problems are not lifted. Before, I thought the doctor or nurse that had to do everything, but not anymore. I'm the one that has to do the things. I'm the one who decided about my health, like taking my medications. I can say that I'm very well oriented. That is what helped me. This type of program assists with that. When I have a problem, I now know where I need to go. I can do it on my own, and I know where to look for the information. Under psychological health changes, well, it helped me a lot to help unfold me, because it was very difficult work to open myself up to society. I was more inhibited. I didn't want to and wouldn't talk. I was closed off in another world, but now I'm not. I'm more open. I can talk about the issue. I have a new outlook on life, a new direction that has helped me to continue forward in my life and be positive and to have a better way to live. My health increased a lot in a positive way and helped me to maintain myself, to create a better state of health, both physically and emotionally, and well, and I believe in the results. There is where it can be appreciated. So some of the impacts, there were several, and in the interest of time, I'm going to go through these pretty quickly, but these are, like I said, I can always give you these slides. But the most important were that we saw in within 1 year for the individual participants themselves, they began to utilize our services more and more, started making their case management appointments on a regular basis, the support groups, and then art group that was developed. Also, the increase in family involvement. This is an area where I feel like there needs to be more program interventions designed to involve families, because I really saw we really started to see an increase in family playing a role in their healthcare, in the healthcare of the client. Increase in knowledge and communication skills and participation in HIV planning meetings. Oh, this is a big one. This is what we wanted. So in that first year alone, about 8 to 10 on average of the participants would attend the HIV planning meetings, the San Diego HIV planning meetings, which were in downtown San Diego. And we were 15 miles south over 90% of them did not have a car. So this was huge. By their participation and their speaking up, within that first year, we managed to get the county to do several things. One, approve transportation by the American Red Cross to and from the plan every planning meeting. We also had the county create all documents in Spanish, all of them. And it took a while, but they did it. They also started to make a larger effort in reaching out to our clients by coming down to us to conduct regional needs assessment meetings. And they were engaging us to help them plan for services and things like that. So a lot happened in that first year, and it was only just the beginning. As far as the community, increase in community awareness, more and more people started to hear about us just because the participants were out there. And because of that, word of mouth is huge, especially in our community. It spread like wildfire, and more people learned about our services and just started coming in. From that point forward, I would say, Rosana, I mean, we increased tenfold. I mean, it was crazy. And we do believe that when we weren't out there promoting very much, we barely had money for our services. So over the years, even more so. We had several programs, challenges, mainly funding and participation barriers. So the participation barriers are a pretty big deal, and they should be considered. Competing priorities, work and family, all that, transportation, childcare. The use of incentives was that was an issue for some. For some people, it was the primary reason they got involved. I mean, that's just realistic. A lot of them weren't working, so for them, they thought they would do anything if you were going to give them incentive. But for over 90% of them, and this came through their interviews, this was not, in the end, not a motivating factor at all. So in the beginning, it worked to just get them in, but in the end, it wasn't their only reason for being in the program. I want to make a point here that any empowerment-based programs, it has to be known and considered that you might not see results immediately, because this process can take years. And the program that we have now, that they have now, the Amigos de Casa, which is what kind of developed as a result of this program, this kind of paved the path for that program. And about 3 or 4 of the original participants are now a part of the Amigos de Casa, and this is a peer advocacy program, are now a part of it. And so it takes a while. It could take several years. And as you can imagine, now that you have that overview of the stigma, it can take a while for the stigma barriers to be reduced. So I'm just going to implications for practice. Findings contribute to research on community interventions with a transborder HIV-positive Latino population. Empowerment-based interventions that incorporate skill building, community involvement activities, and social support can reduce barriers to care, enhance health-related behaviors, and improve the health and quality of life in HIV-positive Latinos. Findings have the potential to influence design and implementation of similar programs in other ethnic, underserved, or oppressed communities. Highlights the importance of participatory research involving practitioners, researchers, and community members in a joint process to meet the specific needs of the community. And there's some guidelines for empowerment interventions that were from an article. And like I said, you can get those later. But thank you. And now I'll bring up Rios, and I do want to mention that
that Brit